Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and this is a real treat because we are joined by country legend Charlie Pride, who's getting honored at the Grand Ole Opry's birthday bash on October 13th. Mr. Pride, it's an honor. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
Thank you, Jason. Thank you very much.
Now, as we mentioned, he's going to be the headline performance at the Opry's birthday bash on October 13th. How big of an honor is it that they tapped you? And do you know what you're going to perform yet? Have you worked that all out? What can we expect from the birthday bash?
I'm sure that's whatever it is, that's what I'm going to do. I go where I'm told. I go and do Jason what I'm told. I'm very familiar at some time, but I'm not. I don't know where I go on or who's with me, but Jason, that's right. They're going to tell me everything.
All right, cool.
The other Jason.
The other Jason will have it lined up, I know. Well, to me, I think Whoopi Goldberg on The View the other day was trying to endorse you as a Kennedy Center honor, and that would get you to D.C.
I got a chance to see that. She's a big fan of mine. I want to tell you a little story. I didn't meet her out there, but I was there, and I'm going to explain that to you. Her and Andy Williams, Red Buttons, and James Colburn, Jim Colburn,
yeah,
James Colburn, the actor, and myself went out to the Milton Berle birthday bash out in California, and just as I was going to try to meet her, I was going to go over. I was going over to him, and I was going to try to meet her. She went and saw somebody else. She said hi to, and so I didn't even get the chance to see either one of them. somebody else grabbed me, and but to make a long story short, I received the Lifetime Pioneer Award in New York, and she made a big spiel about me there. And then next thing you know, I was on the show on the View. And I was just the other day, what you were just talking about, I saw what she said. She couldn't believe that I hadn't been Kennedy Center honor. I hadn't been honored there. And she said, I don't believe this. So she said, she's going to work on this. So I saw that. And then so she told me too that they want me back on the View too sometime early.
Awesome.
Soon rather.
Well, I'm gonna keep tooting that horn because as great as the Opry birthday bash is, we want you to come here to DC at the Kennedy Center. So I'm gonna keep pushing that one. Now a lot of our listeners, you know, they obviously know your music over the decades, but they might not know your baseball ties. I know you're a partial owner of the Rangers now. But take us back. Tell our listeners who might not be familiar with your baseball roots of began a nice little ball career there.
No, I came out of Mississippi and out of Sledge playing with the Memphis Red Sox, and I ended up my mother signed for me with the Yankees in 19. I was a teenager, signed, and they sent me to Rio Vista, California, and that game was up and down with me. I got a chance to get looked at in 1961 by the Los Angeles Angels. My most of my experience was spent. I was just behind playing behind in the old Negro League, but Hank Aaron, Ernie Banks, and Willie Mays. I was just behind them about a year or so, because I played with Memphis Red Sox and I went up and played in the Iowa State. Iowa State was a semi-pro type thing. Al B. Pearson and different ones was a good team up there. But what I did, I tried to work and make I tried to make the Memphis Red Sox team that year, and I didn't make it. So a guy put together a black team to go up in a guy by the name of Jim Ford to play up in Iowa. And I played in the Wall Lake, Iowa, which was Andy Williams' home.
Wow.
Had all black team up there, and we got up there, but we didn't. We were playing on percentages, and I about starved up there. Sometimes I pull up weeds, and we'd eat the bottom of them sometimes. But I don't want to remember that anymore. I'd like to forget about all that. But what had happened? They came. We didn't win nothing. It rained. See, it'd be beautiful. It'd be beautiful in the day. At night, playing on percentage like that, it would rain buckets, you see. And then we didn't have no money. So anyway, it was a popcorn king up there took over the team, and he started giving us money to eat on. But what happened is that we didn't win nothing once we started playing. And so the guys went back to the Memphis Red Sox, and they raided the whole pitching staff. So that's when I went back, and I got me a job, and I was there for good. So that happened there. So I played up and down. But like I say, during that particular time, my mother signed a contract for me to go out to Rio Vista, California with the Yankees. And they sent me to Boise, Idaho, and from Boise, Idaho to Fond du Lac, Wisconsin, and from Fond du Lac, Wisconsin back to Memphis. And I cracked my elbow back in 1956. And that kind of did me, and I had all three ones, what you call the hammer, the hook, and the change. But they didn't have no top Tommy John type thing. Once you heard it back in those days, so I developed me a good knuckleball, and I was just going through some things here before you all call, and I've just found something I've been looking for a long time. I did three Super Bowls. I definitely did. Two, I got them right here, but I think I did three Super Bowls and four World Series during my time of being in, segueing out of that into singing.
Yeah, well, we're glad you segued, but in a way, you still kind of, you're basically the Jackie Robinson of country music. That's my segue. I mean, you know, nowadays we have Darius Rucker and Jimmy Allen, a bunch of African-American country singers coming up now, but do you take a special pride in being the pioneer there?
Well, the difference of people, I'll just try to see if I can condense this down. Most, like a lot, like talking to you and the different, people that want to interview me, one of them might say, well, Charlie, how does it feel to be the Jackie Robinson of country music? Or, Charlie, how does it feel to be the first colored country singer? Charlie, how does it feel to be the first Negro country singer? Charlie, how does it feel to be the first black country singer? How does it feel to be the first Afro-American country singer? I said, I feel the same way when I was colored. And that's the way I answer. And I said, which one you are? I said, that's four of them, isn't it? Five. I said, I'm a staunch American. I said, but I understand why you ask that. I said, but now, the reason, the difference in Jackie Robinson and I, he was specifically picked to do what he did. I wasn't picked. See, my understanding is that Branch Rickey brought him in. He had that great season at Montreal. They brought him in, set him down, and house. Hello, N-word. They called him that. And he looked at me and said, you don't know why I said that, didn't you? Now, this is what was given to me. He said, well, you're going to hear that a lot. You're going to be, this is Jackie Robinson. Branch Rickey talked to him. Said, you're going to hear that a lot. Now, what are you going to do about it? He says, well, it was kind of a pause. And he said, well, what you going to do? You're going to take your baseball, you're going to take the bat and the glove, and you're going to win it that way. He goes, if you don't make it, the others are not going to make it. So that's what was given to me. So that's the difference. But nobody came and set me down and said, hey, N-word, you're going to go in and be the country music. Now, here's what you got to do. I went into it by choice, you see. So that's the difference. But being in that position of being the first in that the other category of being there, there was a different ball game the way I went into country music than him.
Absolutely.
And I want to point something out too, Jason, is that do you have any idea how many black American players are in the major leagues today? You got a lot of Latinos from Dominican Republic.
I got you. You got your Caribbean, yeah.
Yeah, but you got maybe a little better than 7%. Now, this man went, like Branch Rickey told him, to go play, and he did all that breaking the barriers and all that stuff. And I'm gonna try to do it like this. I said to my grandson, he could have been just as good a baseball player as he was a basketball player. Here's what I said to him. I said, Carlton, I said, Tom Hicks gave Alex Rodriguez $252 million in baseball. I said, why you? I said, you? He said, no. He said, I want to play basketball and football. No, he said, basketball. He said, the girls all follow basketball. I said, but you can buy a lot of girls with $252 million. you can attract rather. But anyway, it's that kind of thing. And I feel kind of bad to see how much he gave, meaning Jackie Robinson, and the amount of American blacks that's in the major leagues. It's stunning.
Yeah, that's a great point. It probably gravitate to other sports, like the story you just said. So yeah. It's probably another question you've heard a billion times, but our listeners, it's the one thing they want to know is, take me into your memories of when you first read Ben Peters' song "Kissing Angel Good Morning" and memories of recording that. There's no way you could have known it was going to be that big, but just memories of that. Our listeners are going to want to hear that. I know it.
Well, I didn't know how big, you're right. I didn't know how big it was going to be, but I just remember how much I loved it when I heard it. But I had no idea it would do what it did, but I couldn't wait to get in the studio, Jason. And I'm glad that I went in there and did that.
Do you think the secret is the pause after you've got to, and then there's that little pause, and then you hit it? Does that make it, or what about the melody do you think works for it?
Well, I'm in the business of selling lyrics, feelings, and emotions. I try to sell all that in one package, and how I phrase it, that's what I try to sell, the whole package, you see?
Yeah.
That's what you have to try to do. And so, for example, I only had, that was the only million-selling single I ever had, but Jack Clement was my producer, and he said, Charlie, he said, these songs we're cutting right now, in 50 years, they're going to still be playing them. And I looked at him, and he says, he kind of right spot on, you know. And I go back now and listen to some songs that I didn't quite want to record, you know. But he did most of the picking of the song. But he would let me explain what I liked and didn't like. So that to me, I go back and say, oh, that was pretty good. I didn't think that was that good back then. I listen at my album. So, you know, I go back, I got 50. So 500 and some songs, and I go back and I say, hey, that wasn't too bad. And that's the way I'm living it out now, by going back and listening to what we did. And I've got a new album now called Music in My Heart, and my fans, a lot of time they'll say, is he singing to a track? He sounds the same.
Same guy. Well, everyone go check out that new album. And then I guess final question, just to localize it and wrap it back around, streets of Baltimore, since we are a DC station, a lot of listeners are up in Baltimore too. I know there's been a ton of versions of this, cover versions of this song, but I think yours might be my favorite. But memories of recording that one and your tie to Baltimore.
Well, you know, Bobby Bear is a real good friend of mine, and I was working on the satellites. I lived in Montana one month short of 10 years in Montana. My two youngest kids were born in Montana, and I was working the silos and the missile sites up there. And he came, Bobby Bear, and he had Detroit City, I heard that he came in. They paid him $400 that night. I think he did 30, 35 minutes. So I said, in the city, he'll be in Billings. That was in Great Falls. Billings the next night. I said, boy, that's $800. I said, ooh, if I could get that kind of money. But I was singing locally, you see, and working on the missile site. So I recorded Detroit City on my first album. My first Jack Clement, my producer, he picked out that one and all the big hits, and that was my first, and I never will forget the number on RCA. It was 3645. I recorded that, and Detroit City, and of course Bobby Bear, he recorded the Streets of Baltimore too, and I recorded that. But I don't try to. I just pick what I like and like to record myself, and I cut a lot of things that of people that I admire. You know, I did a tribute album to Jim Reeves. I did a tribute album to Hank Williams. So, but I do my own phrasing, and as I say, I try to. I tell people the best I can explain my voice and my projection, and what I try to do is I sell lyrics, the feelings and emotions. I try to shove them all out there and let them do what I see they do to them all these years.
Awesome. Well, we really appreciate it. You've been generous with your time, so we'll let you run. But my grandparents, seriously, you're their favorite. They've seen you a million times. Do you mind giving them a shout-out? Lewis and Nelda.
Well, I'd like to appreciate them being a fan, Lewis and Elder. I hope someday you'll get a chance to see my show. We got probably a show even now better than we ever had. So that's not a brag. You heard a guy say, no brag, just fact. There's a Walter Brennan. It's no brag, just fact. So that's, if they ever come, they're going to see a real good show.
Awesome. Well, thank you. Charlie Pride, everybody, again, with the Grand Ole Opry Bash coming up. But first, yeah, we'll keep up the Kennedy Center honors pressure for you, sir. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you.